Hello, and thank you for listening to this Analyst Insight podcast from the Information Security Forum. Welcome back to our regular listeners. I've met some of you. I've been out and about at quite a few chapters and been delighted to meet quite a few people who have showed me on their phone that they listen to the podcast. That's fabulous. So thanks for finding the time in your day to tune in and listen. Thanks also to those folks listening for the first time. I hope we become a regular event in your schedule too. If there's something you need to share, get in touch. mark.ward@securityforum.org is the address for any comments, ideas, or requests to join in. Yeah, we'd love to have you on. This episode is about BISOs and CISOs, or should that be CISOs and BISOs? It sounds like a tongue twister, doesn't it? We'll be exploring what a BISO is, how they have emerged, what they do, and how CISOs relate to them, if they do. Is the BISO the Charizard to the CISO's Charmander? It's Venusaur to its Bulbasaur, or vice versa? Extra points for getting that reference. I had to look it up. Way too late in the day for me. We've got exactly the right folks to explore this issue as they have lived and or studied both these roles and how they fit into an organisation and what they do. My name is Mark Ward. I'm a researcher at the ISF and first came across the term BISO while doing some work on the next generation CISO. The two are not the same, though at first glance they may look like they might be. Our first guest is Erhan Temirkan, currently Director of Information Security and Technology at Fleet Mortgages, who before taking on that role was a CISO and a BISO. Hello, Erhan.
Hi, Mark. Pleasure to meet
you. Yeah, great to have you here. So when did you first hear the title of BISO? Because I was looking up and Google Trends tells me 2015 it was starting to appear quite a lot in searches, but I don't know if it was around then, after.
I think for me, it was during my role at Arkiva, which was around 2017. So not far off the Google 2015, I guess.
Yeah, it's quite a new thing, I guess, isn't it, really? I mean, that's not long in information security times, just a few years. But also here is Paul Watts, who was a CISO and has written about being a BISO and the types of roles that fall under both. Hello, Paul.
I've hired the odd BISO in my time as well, actually. Yeah, I do like BISOs. Couldn't eat a whole one. absolute pleasure to be here as ever, Mark. I've got a very, very odd image in my head right now of you working the room going, show me your phone, show me Spotify, show me the podcast, you're fired, show me the... I'm hoping that you're a little bit kinder and more gentle about that, but I want to encourage everybody to be getting involved and listening to our podcast and listening to people like Erhan, who's been really hard to pin down.
He's a busy man. He's a BISO. That's what they're like.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But I wonder if bringing BISOs in out of the wild, are they easy to tame? Are they a difficult creature?
What a great opening gambit that is. Your witness.
Well, you've chained me down now. So
well, let's clear up some confusion then. BISO and CISO, how are they different? Is it just the letter? BC, is there an DISO? I don't know. There seems to be quite a few of these kind of things because I know, Erhan, you mentioned TISO as well. So,
yes.
Yeah.
They are very, very new terms. Obviously, they've been around for a few years now. And I think they do have their differences, obviously, with the TISO role being, you know, the T being technical, that is seen as a more technical role in comparison to, obviously, the BISO, which is the business element, which, of course, you know, it's really around being within the business. You are there to translate those technical requirements into that business language and align them with the business objectives at the same time.
Right. Is there a hierarchy here? Is the CISO the top of the tree? Is that what everybody wants to get to? I don't know, Paul, have you seen that in your natural history of the security leaders?
We still operate in a very traditional model for information and cybersecurity. So there's usually somebody at the top of that pinnacle who's taking overall responsibility, let's not use the word accountability, and that's a conversation for another day. So generally what you tend to find is that the BISOs, should they exist, are dissolved through the organizational structure and reporting to the CISO. However, and as I mentioned in the paper that I wrote last year, there are similar operating models which kind of build on the old traditional IT partnering model, where you have a practice of business information security officers and they're allocated out to projects and programs on a need-by-need basis. And that's maybe an earlier conceptual version. But the version, I think, Erhan, you probably were in this space as well. They're FTEs. They're very much sitting in the business functions. They're thinking about what the business is trying to do first, and then they're trying to solve and support and provide easement through the lens of cybersecurity custom and practice.
Erhan, as a being employed as a BISO, was there a CISO who employed you? I don't know. I'm curious about sort of why they felt they needed one.
Yeah, no. So I think for us it was more of a transition. So the I guess the model that Paul described, I reported into the CISO. Originally, I was a more you could describe as a consultant. And I think that transition of being more business led, sitting within the business area, being seen as more of a security business partner, if we call it that. I think the accustomed title that went along with it at the time was BISO, which was it was probably during that tenure and that time when the term was introduced. I think it is a necessary role that CISOs recognise is helpful. Yeah, because it's really, you know, being a BISO, sitting within that business area, you get to see how that business area operates when no one's looking. And, you know, sitting within the business, you know, working with, so for example, in my example, I was working with DevOps teams and devs and really understanding, you know, how they work, how they operate, how they manage their projects. And really that really helped us to not just come down and say, right, these are the requirements, but really find that balance between security and usability, getting right. That balance right.
And was that something a CISO would find hard to do? Is it like having, I don't know, the headmaster walking around the classroom, sort of, oh, quick, you know, look busy, because, like, because you said when people aren't looking for the BISO, which is a kind of intriguing comment. So is the things a BISO can do a CISO would find really difficult?
I don't think it's something that a CISO would find hard to do. You could say that the priorities are different at times. You could say there could be time constraints, but I think I would tie it back to culture, okay? So when I say when no one's looking, I think what I'd align that back to is there's visible culture and there's invisible culture. Right. And I get asked this question sometimes in terms of how would you really measure good cybersecurity culture? And I often say good cybersecurity culture can be measured when, if we look at invisible culture, it's when people act securely when no one's looking.
Right. Good. Yeah. That's a fabulous way to think of it, isn't it? Yeah. I don't know, Paul, do you see that sort of, that BISO, that lends into the organisation, I suppose, for, you know, for their own purposes and that for CISO, I guess, and whatever transformation's going on?
Well, and it's a sweeping generalisation, but CISOs have to deal with some of the sins of their past, which is that a lot of the business will cross the road to avoid us and you always find us in the kitchen at parties. And what we've tried to do with BISOs is make them more amenable and receptive to the business. That level of engagement, and Erhan nailed it earlier when he said it's that consultative, that bedside manner, which gives them the allure because they're listening, they're empathizing, they're putting the business first. That gives you all the engagement that you need. And then you build on that. You know, it's the most ideal way for me to deliver my center-led policy and strategy through the lens of someone who cares about the business. And that's probably the blandest way I can put it. The other thing I would say, and I'm very selfish when I say this, it's to give me eyes and ears. So when I was, the last big role I did, it was the CISO of a big multinational organization, operated in 60, 70 odd countries, 35,000+ employees. But I still had a board that expected me to know all, see all and do all. That's physically impossible. What the BISOs do is they give me visibility. They deal with and are empowered to deal with low level issues and kill them at source. But things that need to be escalated and consolidated are then past my desk. And that gives me, well, it gives me two things. One, it means that things are being dealt with at a molecular level without antagonizing the business. Two, it means that I can have prioritized conversations with my LT and with my board. And third, it gives me time to have lunch every now and then. And I say that facetiously, but sometimes if the CISO is trying to do all of the reactionary stuff, all of the proactionary stuff, all of the strategic stuff, and look after their flock, you haven't got a cat's open hell's chance of even getting a glass of water in a day. And that is not a sustainable place to be. So the BISOs can provide easement, not only for the business, but for the CISO as well. Let's be honest about that. I don't know, Erhan, whether you can kind of relate to that, you know, in your previous roles.
100%, yeah. And you know, as Paul said, it's really, you know, as a BISO, you're the individual who you know, works within that business area. Your kind of key job, or one of my key jobs, was really to build that trust and transparency, okay? And I often tell people that's not just on the basis of, you know, working with them over a period of time, but that even comes down to understanding the culture within that actual department or within that team. So the example I often give people is, you know, previous roles, I've always gone in with a suit and a shirt, okay? And I tried to, you know, back then do that with a group of devs, and realized it wasn't working. The same technique, same tricks, and you know, that I always used, well, wasn't working. Then I realized the Jurassic Park t-shirt came out, and I went in the next day with that T-Rex t-shirt on, and I made it. You know, I got through. But
you were accepted.
I was accepted, and that, as silly as it sounds, you know, there are cultures within teams, right? And you know, if you don't recognize that, etc., and actually working with them, and actually going to the point of, so that was one element of it. The second point I recognized was, with different teams, you have to change your communication style. Okay, so to the point of, you know, you may be able to succeed at some security controls in some projects with teams that are less technical very easily. However, I've had examples where I've worked within dev teams where tried to implement a web filtering product, as an example, I often give. And unfortunately, devs who are highly technical in comparison to other teams that may be less technical, they're going to resist, right? They're going to want to understand, well, why are you doing SSL inspection? Are you trying to be Big Brother? Are you trying to, look at everything that we do? And the example I give, you know, following that path is, with this example, it got to the point where, to really build trust and transparency, I had to go that one step further. And in this case, I actually did a lunch and learn where I invited the dev teams along, and I actually showed them exactly what the security team could see.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah. So, I mean, it's slightly anthropological then. It's sort of like visiting South Sea Islanders kind of thing, understanding their culture. Yeah, I hadn't considered it in those ways, but that makes a huge amount of sense. But it does strike me that, I guess, Paul, to your point, if CISOs had the time, they would do this, but they don't. So they need people to do it for them, I guess, in some respects.
Yeah, I mean, the role of the security leader is very changed from where it was 5 years ago, let's say, maybe more than that. We do spend and have to spend a lot more time thinking about business outcome, thinking about business strategy. The technical stuff, we still need to know that, and we still need to know that in proportion, but it's a lesser part of our roles, let's just say that. But I think the important part, when you're talking down into the business, to use Erhan's example, equally applies when you're talking up into the business. You command respect from a stakeholder by speaking in their language. So where the BISOs can take the business language and translate it technically and vice versa and command the respect of both of those stakeholder groups, the CISO's kind of got to do it in tripartite. But actually, if you've got the BISOs in the room doing a lot of the heavy lifting and building and nurturing those relationships, you've got more time to focus on that upstream relationship to the board, to the regulators, to the governing entities within the organization, command the respect of the technical teams. But of course, you've got to be acceptable and accessible to the business as well. But the BISOs augment and they help you build those relationships, those rapports, and that mutual trust is really, really important. The number of times you go into an organization and you say something like, oh, I've got to implement MFA because there's an FAB, the ABC, and the 1, 2, 3, and everybody goes, you're just scaring me. Go away. Yeah, what's that? And you don't take the time to translate that and explain why or why not. You're doomed to fail.
Yeah. Yeah, because I've certainly talked to quite a few members who have BISOs who do that project work and just are ambassadors right across the organization, and it just, their value comes in that movement and that engagement and time, like you say. I think that's
also a key part that, you know, that I kind of played in the BISO role was actually being that feedback loop back into the CISO. So it wasn't just one way. So actually, you know, feeding back to the CISO and saying, are you aware that, you know, X department's planning to do this, you know, and this is how they're going to operate and this is how they're going to do it. And, you know, time and time again, it was quite interesting that, you know, you would find that it was a good way to discover, you know, any type of shadow IT or, you know, projects that weren't following maybe the consistent path.
You've got to be careful with that. I mean, I agree with you, don't get me wrong. But as you've built that trust up, you can just as easily kick it down if you manifest as chief sneak. And every time they're bringing you into your confidence, you're going off telling the CISO X and Y and Z. So there's a way to do that. I completely get it. You just, it's a very, very delicate balance. You know, trust is hard to earn and even harder to keep. And once you've lost it, it's even harder than that to win it back. So, you know, and once a BISO has lost the trust and the respect of their stakeholder group, they're a burned asset by and large, because it's really hard to get that back. And that's something that definitely sits in the BISO's wheelhouse. You know, command, earn that respect, command that respect, maintain that respect, bring the value, but, you know, keep the CISO informed and just do that in a way that is respecting both parties.
Yeah, no, totally agree with that point. I think, you know, examples where I have done that, I think that transparency followed all the way through. So I would tell that you know, that business area or that individual interview that I would be doing that, right? And it was more around so following that chain so that it's not that, you know, I've taken it from them. And then, you know, as you said, you know, you just on the sideline tell the CISO, you know, I'd keep a full chain of communication from start to finish to say, you know, we're going to pass this through to the CISO now, and that's going to help us reach X outcome, as an example.
Yeah. I'd wonder if your sort of ABISO is a sort of vehicle for the CISO style as well. I mean, you also, I mean, I use the word ambassador because I don't know if there's that, or is it that doesn't pull your making your face there?
I wouldn't agree with that. You know, people need that individuality and that character. You know, to be trusted and respected, you've got to be natural. You've got to be sincere, and you've got to be authentic. You know, if every BISO is the clone of a CISO, I don't think that's a great look, to be fair. Equally, I'm a flipping clown. I don't want my BISOs behaving like me. You know, I need the characteristics and the behaviours have got to be quite natural. If you've got to win that rapport, you've got to reflect on personal style. I think the important thing to say is the messaging from the office of the CISO needs to be reflective in what you say. But you're then on the fly, you're translating that centre-led policy into something that resonates and works well with the business. So it doesn't come across as adversarial. We've got to do X, but we recognise that you are Y. Therefore, we'll behave in Z, and then all three of us are happy. That's kind of what you need to be doing. So yeah, personal style is quite important. I don't know, Erhan, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, you can't go in there pretending to be something that you're not. You know, I'm a big believer in authentic leadership, being yourself. And I talked to a lot of people about this around, you know, and it goes back to, if we take it back to where security used to say no, right? That resistance didn't get us anywhere, right? And to actually, you know, to get to a point where people actually enjoy security. So when we walk in the room, it's not that. It's not, you know, it's not the department of no, and actually a topic that's interesting is trying to actually keep us safe and keep the business running. I think that's a transition that we, you know, that we all kind of need to take. And I think the BISO plays a good part in that, because they are that middle layer, that middle layer that connects the CISO, the you know, the business area, and the BISO sits right in the middle of that.
Yeah. I guess for me, it's a parallel. I remember as a journalist, not liking talking to lawyers, because lawyers would stop you doing what you wanted to do. And sometimes you wanted to break the law because that was a way to get a good story, or, you know, get a particular angle, or just, you know, you wouldn't get the information you needed any other way. But actually, once I talked to a few lawyers, the only way I was going to do that story was talk to the lawyers. And once they understood that, then, you know, things got actually to happen, and I didn't get a reprimand from the police. And the story came out, and we could actually do the work we wanted to do. And I guess that's a similar kind of thing. You know, like I say, you're not trying to say stop that. You're trying to say, what do you want to do? Well, I think you can do that, but it'd be better if you did it this way, or, you know, work with them.
I think what you're facing into there is one of the biggest challenges that security leadership has faced in modern times, is that we did have this perception, as Erhan said, of being the office of no. We've realized now that our value is not in driving and enforcing a compliance culture. We have to drive efficacy and enablement. We've created technology now that can be consumed by the average Joe consumer without any sort of intervention. So our traditional pathways of intercepting technological change are gone. If we throw too many roadblocks in the way, the business will just work around us, go underground and do it anyway. So we've had to change the mindset of the language and the sentiment that we do. It takes time to unpick that. As much as trust is, you know, easy won and easy lost and hard fought back, it's the same in terms of changing the perceptions. And I genuinely believe that the BISOs do create that catalyst for engagement and that demonstration that we are past the office of no, but we recognize that business and technology and work in a different way now, and security just needs to be something that drives the opportunities and the possibilities. It's not about no anymore. It's about making informed, conscious decisions, balancing risk, opportunity, and reward together to deliver the right outcome. We're just not very good at articulating that message sometimes, but I think we get better.
No. But is the BISO a sign of the growing maturity of information security then? Sort of, it wouldn't have emerged if it wasn't needed, I guess. Or is it, you know, or at least information security as a practice has become that thing that does help businesses, and you need a way to start to do that better rather than just a technical CISO leader? No, maybe.
Yeah, no, I would say it's a sign of maturity. I think it's a sign of recognizing that old behavior of saying no is a behavior of the past. And actually, we, you know, the role of the BISO could be said that, you know, often I say this, is that it moves from the culture of saying no to where the BISO is the one who remains in the no. Okay. And you know, working with the business to kind of do that and remain in the know at all times to help them achieve what they wanted to achieve, but in a secure way. So, and I would say that comes with maturity. You know, it gets to a point where their business recognizes that, one, security is necessary. That's one. But two, that security needs to be balanced with business objectives and in a language that the business understands. I think, you know, those three things together is a recognition of maturity overall.
I would add to that by saying that I think that information and cybersecurity has gone on an evolutionary journey, much to the same evolutionary journey that information technology went on. So if you remember the very early days of information technology, there were business supporting capabilities, and IT teams used to behave like order takers. I want a laptop, here's a laptop. I want a different laptop, here's a different laptop. And then we realized that actually technology was enabling the business, and ultimately it became the business, and the conversation changed. The business said, I want to achieve this outcome. And the technology team would say, these are the things that we can do through the application of technology, changes in processes and the appropriate training of people to allow technologies to support what the business is trying to do. And that's how we moved into relationship management and all of those wonderful things with ICT teams. The same thing is happening with security. It used to be about telling the business what they were not allowed to do. Now it's about enabling the business to do things in a safe and secure way, balancing risk with reward. I think the final challenge that we've got to overcome, and oh my days, I mean, if the number of times we've been in a room and we've had this conversation, is security wrestling itself away from the historical roots of technology and being able to stand on its own two feet as an independent entity. I think that is the next step. And I think the BISOs, just this interworking between business outcome and the practice of security and risk management, I think is a massive step forward. But I think that's the historical roots. IT changed, we're changing too.
Good. But just to ask a slightly provocative question, should all CISOs now have the kind of skills that BISOs are building up? That understanding of the business, or that just, like you said, an understanding of that culture and just trying to a better sense of how the business works rather than that technical background? I don't know if that's, are you going to see some changes in those new security leaders at all?
Yeah, so Paul, you and I spoke about this countless times, right? And my view is yes, you know, CISOs today need to have that level of business acumen. They need to be able to translate that technical risk into the business language that the business understands. You know, there's a thing that Paul, you often say as well, right? That the CISOs need to speak the language of the business. You know, the business don't need to understand security, right? We need to translate that into it. And that's probably not verbatim how you say it, Paul. Very bad translation there. But and I couldn't agree with that more, right? I think we need to recognize that as bad as it sounds, security is not everyone else's priority. It's hard to say it sometimes, but it's the, you know, the chief sales officer, he cares about sales, right? The chief marketing officer cares about marketing, you know, the CFO cares about the financials. Everyone's got different priorities, and I think that bridge where you're able to translate security or security risk into a language that they understand and make it relevant to their subject area is where you start to gain buy-in. And I think that is what a CISO, you know, a CISO of today needs to be able to do, is really understand the business, the culture, the, you know, the norms, the beliefs, you know, exactly how that business operates. Because, you know, we all face similar security challenges. You know, if you speak to many CISOs, we've all got the same, most of us face often the same threats, the same challenges.
I guess the thing that I would add to that briefly is, and I was having this conversation with somebody earlier, actually, we've historically, it's come to us, you know, we have hidden behind regulations and laws to get our way. And the reality of it is that in certain sectors where there is no law or regulation, and although that is, you know, dramatically changing over time, they can cross the road to ignore. They can ignore us. And what we realized, and, you know, I came across this very early on in my career when I moved from regulated FS into retail, that first transition, it was like being hit in the face with a frying pan. And suddenly it dawned on me, I've got to be a salesperson. I've got to be a marketeer. I've got to sell security and I've got to sell the value. Otherwise, I'm going nowhere fast. And once that penny drops, you start to think very, very differently about the way that you do your job. If you want to move away from a compliance culture, you also got to know how to sell and extol the virtues and values of doing everything else that comes with information security and risk management.
Yeah, I think when I did that Next Gen CISO paper, quite a few of those Next Gen CISOs, and they were quite rare at that time, I think, but I think there's more of them now. But it was, you know, a lot of them didn't talk about security at all. They went and sorted out the problems that people had. And sort of, you know, again, it was that I want to do this, and that technical acumen and business understanding would only help, it was the only thing the CISO had to get them on side. And without that, you are just beating them over the head and saying, nope, don't
do
that.
At the end
of
the day as well, we shouldn't beat ourselves up. You know, I know we talk about becoming a next generation security leader, but actually I challenge that ever so slightly. You know, business society is on an evolutionary journey. Business has evolved. Technology has evolved. Security has evolved. And security leaders need to evolve. So I don't think it's about saying, you know, we've got it wrong, we're out of step and we need to reboot and rinse and repeat and go again. I think we're on that evolutionary journey. I just think that we all need to recognize what that looks like in the context of, what, you know, where we work and what we're doing at any point in time. But it's definitely what I would say is an evolution of the role and the tradecraft in which we serve.
Well, just to sort of play around with that metaphor a bit. So is the CISO doomed? Are they the dinosaurs? Is the BISO the meteorite that's going to extinguish them? I don't know, or are they, you know, one of the mammals that's going to survive the explosions and prosper and become a different thing?
I think I would look at it a different way. I would say that the role of a CISO and a BISO is different. However, those roles can merge depending on the organization and size. So what I mean by that is, if you're a smaller organization, I would say it's unlikely you're going to have a BISO and a CISO. However, what you are going to have is a CISO who's operating as a BISO as well, as part of their role. So, for example, you know, I would say in my current capacity, I'm quite a hands-on CISO. You know, I kind of sit within the business. You know, I still operate at a strategic level. I still roll my sleeves up and get technical sometimes. You know, you could argue that isn't the role of a CISO. But I think that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that we shouldn't put these roles in a box. The roles can be adaptable. Yeah, there can be a job description that says this is what a CISO is or this is what a BISO is. However, you know, depending on the organization's size, the industry, just the nature of, you know, even the, maybe the budget that the organization has based on their hiring pipeline. You know, I most definitely wouldn't say the role of the CISO is doomed.
I mean, I talk about this in the third paper that we released a couple of weeks ago, in terms of, you know, my predictions for security leadership, and they are based on us doing nothing different. You know, a quote that is, you know, correctly or incorrectly attributed to Albert Einstein is, you know, the definition of madness is doing the same thing and expecting different results. And I think the fear is that businesses vastly changed, even through the pandemic, you know, that had a massive impact on the way that businesses operate. Security still, we're very good at talking amongst each other about the fact, oh, the board won't talk to us, we can't do this, we can't do that. But the reality of it is that change needs to happen on both sides in order for us to progress. I don't think that the CISO is necessarily on a path to extinction, but I think their relevance will start to diminish if they don't forge and maintain those interconnections with the modern day business. And I think in some organizations have seen and observed that the BISO role has become so powerful and so useful that devolution of responsibility into the operating model of the business means that you don't need that central focal point anymore. Although I would argue that's largely a tenuous point given how quickly the threat landscape has evolved. But there's a very real reality. I mean, the average tenure of a CISO is still pretty low compared to the average cycle of a business strategy. That is massively frustrating if you're halfway through a business strategic cycle and a new CISO comes in and reboots the security strategy. That must drive the board absolutely insane. And it drives CISOs equally insane after 2 years when they say, I just can't get what I need done here. They're not talking to me. They're not communicating. And I'm going to go elsewhere. And that cycle, we need to protract the cycle of CISO tenures to at least survive a business cycle, strategic cycle. I think that's the only way we're going to make progressive change. But that starts with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely starts with, I think, and just to summarize then, it strikes me that the CISO role is one of adaptation, I think, and like you say, evolutionary very much. Sort of find out your circumstances, your habitat, your ecological niche and fit in that. And again, to torture that metaphor to its end, then I guess you should be apes rather than pandas, because pandas are going nowhere. But apes thrive and are active in many, many different
habitats. We're cuddly koalas. So,
yeah, I think CISOs,
come and
apes
cuddle
rather than pandas. Do we agree?
Cuddle a BISO. We're all friends.
Koalas, well, they do. Definitely not. Cuddle your local BISO. Yeah, good advice to end on there. Thank you. Thanks, Johan. Thanks, Paul. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, tell your colleagues. You can now find ISF podcasts on all major podcast platforms. Look for our page on Audioboom where you can subscribe to make sure you don't miss an episode. The podcasts are also available at securityforum.org, where you can also learn much more about ISF research tools and guidance. Thanks for listening.